And then that'll be it for Calgary for a while, thankfully. Because you know what? I think I speak on behalf of everybody that watches most of the Sens games or listens to them. Yeah, that's enough Calgary Flames.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And also, JR, and mentioned by Pierre McGuire, my power ranking, of course, is Calgary and Vancouver. I like the other four, but I'm assuming Calgary's looking at this. And even if Montreal gets going just a little bit, you'll run out of track in a hurry, right? If they don't, you know, basically that top four, it's going to be end up being Toronto. Winnipeg now moving up. You're going to have to solidify that spot or should be over.
Yeah, well, Edmonton's kind of stumbling a little bit now, and Montreal and Calgary's there. I think Vancouver will be tough. Anyway, more of the hockey stuff coming up in just a minute, but certainly we are edging ever closer. We're seeing, if you're an NFL fan, it's seemingly by the day, more and more news about players being released as all teams have to get under the salary cap level by March 17th. That's the start of the new NFL year. So those trades that you've heard announced, like for Carson Wentz, and for Matthew Stafford, those actually aren't official until March the 17th. So that's a couple of weeks from now. And then, of course, free agency hits right after that. So we're in for some a whole bucket full of NFL news. If you follow ProFootballTalk.com, great website where they kind of collate all the information. Let's bring in Josh Alper this morning from ProFootballTalk.com on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline to make some sense of it all for us. How are you doing this morning, Josh?
Doing great.
Excellent. Thanks a lot for joining us. So I'm gonna drop the first one right away because I can't believe when it first was speculated on a few weeks ago, I said, "Nah, that's crazy. The Seattle Seahawks are never going to trade Russell Wilson. Come on." But it just seems to be building speed here, and it looks like it's going to happen. So do you think it's going to happen? And if so, why is it happening?
I think when the push comes to shove, my feeling is still that Russell Wilson will be in Seattle for the 2021 season. I think that when you look at the list of teams that he's willing to agree to a trade, willing to be traded to, the Bears, the Raiders, the Saints, and the Cowboys, I don't see where the Seahawks are getting the quarterback in return that they're going to need to get in order to make a deal like this, along with all of the other draft picks and everything else that they would need to get, as well as incur a salary cap hit. I don't think that at this point the Seahawks are looking to rebuild. I think they're looking to, you know, I think everyone here wants to maximize the window of winning. And I think that Wilson feels they haven't done that. And I think that's the why for why he's upset. I don't think he feels they've made the moves that when you look at what Tampa Bay did, what you look at some other teams have done in recent years in terms of going all in to support a quarterback, I don't think he feels that the Seahawks have done that. And I think this offseason, the Seahawks' priority should be to find a way to make him feel that that's the case and that you can move forward. And then if it doesn't, I think you could see something happen next year. I just really think it's an unlikely scenario this year for everything to fall together in a way that Russell Wilson winds up in Chicago, let's say.
And kind of funny on the story, it starts out of whispers of him wanting out. Now he's mad at the Seahawks because they're fielding calls about it. Is it time for all parties involved to sit down and try to hash this out before they end up doing something foolish?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the case. And I think that, you know, to go back and forth through the media is never a great thing, and that can certainly steal people to their preferred view. I think we've seen that a lot in all walks of life in the United States, that everybody sort of digs into their view and stops trying to find a solution that other than I want exactly what I want. And I think that it's something that it behooves both sides to work on this year, because there's really just whatever you're going to do. If Russell Wilson is going to go to Chicago and they're going to trade a million assets for him, what are the Bears going to be next year? You know, what would the Saints be with their salary cap space if they're giving up whatever pieces they have to get him? Now, playing for Sean Payton would be great, but I think that Seattle's still the best hope for Russell Wilson to win in 2021.
Talking to Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com, the Steelers announced yesterday a restructuring of Ben Roethlisberger's deal. He'll basically take a $5 million pay cut, and it sounds like next year will be a final season for him in Pittsburgh, and then probably he's going to hang it up. Are you surprised at the end of the day that the Steelers decided to roll back with Big Ben for one more season, given his season last year?
I mildly surprised. I think that there are a lot of teams that would have of cut bait and said, you know, it's going to be a hit financially. It's going to be a hit trying to find the right next quarterback, and maybe we'll have to, you know, fall backwards. But I think there is a sense in Pittsburgh that try and to go back to what I said about Tampa and what other teams have done, and try and find a way to get this salary cap in a place where they can add pieces that make this, you know, one last big run. And if it all falls short and it all falls apart, maybe you see wholesale changes in Pittsburgh like we haven't seen in ages. But, you know, Mike Tomlin's been there a long time. Kevin Colbert, the GM, has been there a long time. Roethlisberger's been there a long time. We saw Marquise Pouncey retire. We've seen so many other players that were hallmarks of the Roethlisberger era leave. This does feel like a transition point, and I think that how this year plays out is going to say just how big a transition point is. I think you could see a completely, you know, completely new direction from the Steelers in 2022, and I think that this year they're really going to try one last run, one last hurrah, and maybe whatever they were doing over the first 10, 11 weeks of this past season, if there's a way to sustain that a little bit longer and get a little bit deeper, is their goal. I get it. I don't like the chances of it happening, though.
Von Miller's 31 years old. How tricky is his contract situation based on age, based on injury, and at the same time, the fact that he's also under investigation? This has to be a tricky one for the Broncos to navigate.
Yeah, it is, and I don't know. I don't know that you can, if you say to him, "Hey, you know, we're not going to pick up your option, and we're not going to move forward with you under the current contract." I don't know that Von Miller winds up saying, "I want to stay in Denver." I think that makes him one of these pieces that can go and be a crowning piece to a defense somewhere else. If he's going to be available, we really don't know much about this criminal situation. But if he's healthy and able to, you know, be Von Miller in off the edge for somebody, I think, you know, you'd see teams lining up around the block. You know, J.J. Watt just got $30 million over 2 years. I think that it's going to be a hard pitch for the Broncos to say to Von Miller, like, we're not going to pay you the $18 million you're due this year, but we want you to come back for 10. If he's not sold that team is going to be ready to win. And I don't know how you can be unless something happens at quarterback to clearly upgrade on Drew Lock before a decision gets made in the next couple of weeks.
Talking to Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com. So Joe Douglas, the GM of the Jets, said earlier this week that he'll take calls on Sam Darnold, the quarterback. Sounds like a willingness to trade him. Of course, the Jets have the second pick in the draft, so they can draft one of those good young quarterbacks if they so choose. What are the potential, what are the landing spots for Darnold, who, I mean, everybody looks at it and goes, okay, lots of potential, but nothing proven. What are the landing spots, and are, you know, is anybody going to pay big for Sam Darnold, or are they selling at a discount right now?
Yeah, you know, I thought that Joe Douglas, what he said seemed unremarkable. I mean, of course you're taking calls on a guy that has been a bottom-ranked quarterback for his first 3 years, and all the reasons about it are, you know, there are still people who I think who believe in Sam Darnold's future and believe that he can be a starting quarterback. But when you look at the spots where he would be a clear choice, you know, as long as the Indianapolis trade for Wentz goes through and nothing gets in the way of that, there's not a lot of places. You can't imagine the Jets will trade him to the Patriots. And look, the Patriots have destroyed every time they've seen him, so I don't know that they'd be rushing to go get him anyway. You take that off the table, I don't know that there's a clear starting spot. A place like Pittsburgh makes all the sense in the world for him to be a backup for Ben Roethlisberger for a year, learn the system, learn what they're doing, and then move forward potentially as their starting quarterback the next year. But he's, you know, you're not going to pick up his fifth year option, which now would be guaranteed, so he's going to be a free agent after this season. It makes it very hard to think you're going to get anything of great value for him. And the second the Jets make it clear they're trading him, they're also signaling that they're taking a quarterback with the second pick, or, you know, unless he's a part of a package for Deshaun Watson, which is the only place where if Darnold were to go to Houston and Watson go to the Jets, then I think you'd see him as the starter.
You touched on J.J. Watt. Just thoughts on the contract itself for where he's at in his career and for all the injuries he's had. Does that feel like a bit of an overpayment by Arizona?
A little bit of one, but it's one that, you can defend. You say you put J.J. Watt on the same defensive line with Chandler Jones and have those guys rushing the passer with you know, Buda Baker is a good safety. Isaiah Simmons showed some life in the second half of the season. And you try and get a defense that can do more than it did last year. Maybe you can re-sign Hassan Reddick. I doubt that that's going to happen now that J.J. Watt's there. But you put a defense there to support what you would hope would be continued improvement from Kyler Murray on offense. And you take your swing. There are going to be so many guys getting cut in the next week or so, week or 2 weeks, because of cap issues and because of the need for teams to get under a shrinking cap, that certain places are going to be appealing for veterans trying to win a championship. And when you have J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones on defense, it's the kind of thing that other players say, you know, I want to be a part of that. I think similar to what, to keep going back to it, what we saw with the Bucks and Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski. And I think you're going to see a lot of guys want to play for Tampa this offseason as well.
All right, so I want you to explain to our listeners, because I watched, Mike Florio from your website, Josh, kind of get into it with Chris Sims yesterday. This idea the Baltimore Ravens have put forward, a new idea for how to deal with overtime to make it perhaps more equitable. It's called spot and choose. So can you explain to everybody what the idea the Ravens are putting forward make as part of the new overtime rules?
Sure. So the proposal is that the winner of the coin toss chooses either where the ball will be spotted or whether they're going to play offense or defense to start overtime. And so you can choose to spot the ball at your 24-yard line, and the other team would then get to say, all right, we'll take offense and we'll try and score and end the game, or we'll play defense and try and get the ball back. So there's some strategy involved there that takes it out of the chance of winning a coin toss, where obviously you're going to receive the kickoff. And you're basically, there's game theory. There's where do we put the ball so that we give ourselves the best chance to win this game right out of the gate? And I think it's an interesting idea. I think it's probably too radical for the NFL to adopt at this point, I just based on history, but I think anything that limits the value of winning the coin toss in terms of winning a game, would be a step in the right direction. So I do hope it gets a good look, but I do feel like it's probably a bridge too far right now.
Yeah. So when I watched Mike and Chris kind of go through it, I think Mike made the point of, and this is done through analytics or whatever, that probably what's going to happen is that the team that wins the coin toss will say the ball will be placed on the 13-yard line. I think for some reason, I don't know how they came up with that number. And then the other team will decide, okay, well, if it's the Kansas City Chiefs, okay, Patrick Mahomes and their offense, you go, okay, we're going to risk it from the 13, whereas a team that's more defensively oriented might say, well, you guys take the ball because we think we can stop you on defense. So I guess my question would be then, Josh, what stops it from always being the same thing, where it's always going to be the team that wins the toss says 13-yard line?
Well, what it'll be is the team says that, and then the team on offense scores 2-3 times, and all of a sudden it's like, all right, maybe we've got to push it even further back.
Right,
and
okay.
Let it play out. And, that would be – I think you're right that I think it's something that would wind up playing out that way. But, you've seen with two-point conversions, it's – I think the thing where we've seen analytics the most get involved in the game is two-point conversions and or going for it on fourth downs. And you see there's still pretty wide fluctuation in how teams approach that stuff. So it may not be that cut and dried, but I do think it probably settles in somewhere like that.
With the drop into the salary cap, do you think teams are planning this as kind of a one-off, or do you think they're saying, hey, for the foreseeable future? Because it certainly feels like in the United States this next season, a pretty good chance we're going to have bums back in the seats.
Yeah, I think it is seen as a one-off. You're going to see these new TV deals go through in short order. That's going to pump even more money in, and I think the NFL will manage it a bit, because I don't think they want to go from drop to enormous rise, because all that'll mean is a lot of contracts that wind up looking awful in 2 years. So I think it'll be managed a bit, but I do think you're going to see teams, some teams treating this as a chance to really load up on guys, and some teams treat this as a chance to you know, retrench and start building a more sustainable long-term approach. Mm.
The NFL, man, it's just like 24/7, 365. The news cycle is unbelievable. It seems like we just got through the Super Bowl. We're talking about next year. Guys are getting traded. It's like a soap opera, which is why we love it. And you guys are all over it on ProFootballTalk.com. Josh, always appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks a lot.
All right. Have a great one, guys.
All right. There's Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com and the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the bigger, better pizza. Order online at GabrielPizza.com.
Yeah, and it's funny, JR, going through each of the leagues, and I won't say baseball. It's a luxury tax. But in the case of the NBA, NHL, NFL, or the salary cap systems, and got to say, having worked under the salary cap system in the National Hockey League, to me, it's my favorite. I love a hard cap. I also like the simple fact you can't renegotiate contracts, and on the entry-level portion of it, for the most part, it makes sense. Where when I look at this football one, man, it never ends. If you, and that capologist term, like that guy has a real job in the NHL. Come on, it's not that big a deal. NFL, trying to renegotiate, to maneuver, to do all these things, it takes a lot of work to manage it properly.
Absolutely. All right, 9:32, we'll take a break, come back, talk more Sens Flames, set you up for a sports weekend ahead, look at this day in sports history, celebrate some sports and hockey birthdays right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Get you set for our weekend, absolutely, after a, if you're a Sens fan, pretty long night last night, as they fall 7-3 to the Calgary Flames. It is, I guess Ottawa just doesn't play Saturday night games anymore. Is that the way the schedule works? Is that what the NHL is saying?
Yeah.
You're the team in Canada that people care about the least, so therefore we won't put you on Saturday night hockey, because it either seems to be Saturday afternoons.
Yeah.
Or they just don't play. They just play on Sunday.
Well, I think the Sens are like a draw in the National Football League. Sunday night football. Sunday night Sens, JR.
Okay.
It's grabbing a hold of the country. Got to tell you, it's actually throwing me for a complete loop, because I actually like the middle of the winter of either working the games here, although the 1-3 with Creech has been awesome. I love being at the CTC on a Saturday night to watch an ice hockey match, and not getting a whole lot of love for that with the Sunday night start. So a little bit strange.
I stand to be corrected here. I don't think the Senators have another Saturday night home game all season, I believe.
Well, somebody ended up putting out the schedule of March on Twitter, and certainly there's none there.
I'd have to go and look at it, yeah. And obviously they play into early May. Take a quick look there, Hammer. The NHL.com schedule just lays it out like it looks like a calendar. I don't think they have a Saturday night home game, I believe, the rest of the season.
Yeah, so. And what a difference in a year like this, JR, and putting a schedule together where day of the week, really, I don't think has nearly the effect on when you're broadcasting. And when you're putting together the Sens schedule, I mean, normally what they were always a Thursday-Saturday team at home, right? And then they had switched that for a little bit, but for the most part, too, also the times of the games. I mean, the 7:30 is such a big deal, and you got to survey your fans and find out what do you like better. And obviously for most people that want to go home and then get out to the old CTC, got to have 7:30 versus 7.
Yeah, so Hammer, no more Saturday night home games this season.
They're done at home.
Yeah, wow. And how many so far this year?
Only three.
Three home games?
That's it.
Three
home
games?
Saturday home games.
Yeah. All season.
All season.
And one was the 7 o'clocker against Toronto, right? And then we've had a 1 and a 3, right? So there's been a variation of the start times
the first,
as well.
The first weekend, right, when they played.
Thursday, or was it?
Friday, Saturday. They played back-to-back nights.
Yeah, exactly.
So there was that one, and then there have been, what were the other two? I'm just trying to, was there a Montreal game?
There was Montreal on the 6th of February.
And one was the Calgary game this past week, was 3 o'clock.
All right. Okay? Well, yeah, I'm not talking three. I'm talking about Saturday night games.
Okay, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Just the one.
That's it? That's it.
Oh, so the Montreal, the one on the 6th was not... that was a 1 o'clock game.
Yeah.
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 That's incredible when you think about it.
That is, eh?
Right? Yeah. Saturday night hockey is an institution. And the fact
not
that...
Not in Ottawa.
No, it is not. No, it is not. And again, I'm kind of there with you, though. I don't... Especially in a year in which, again, it's a rebuilding year... I actually don't mind the Saturday afternoon games. Kind of like you watch them and then you got your night free.
I really do. And again, kind of the working part of it. Not that I don't mind being at them, but normally you're finished 9:43. We wrap up the old, I know it's funny, you know, exact times, about 11:30 on a night where, hey, the other day we're here. And they're also, I think, for people, reaction is a little bit different, right? Probably having a couple of pops on a Saturday night. And if the Sens lose, you're fired up. Where a 1 and a 3 is that. I'm just going to go for dinner.
Spencer, right on it. On text to 12-1200. Wrench. The NHL schedule for not scheduling Sens games on Saturday nights. That's from Spencer.
I'd be up that guy's yin yang so far with a firecracker, he wouldn't know what hit him.
There you go. All right.
And we molded a beautiful poll question, JR, just so you don't want to.
All right, let's hear it.
Really came together.
Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question today is.
It will be up extremely shortly, but it is, what would be the next step in building the Sens defense? unrestricted free agency, UFAs, a big trade, or continue to draft and develop?
Wow, that flowed nicely, Hammer. Good job.
It was all Simmer's idea, as you can tell.
Strong collaboration.
Free agent signing, trade, or continue to stay the course.
Would you agree, as it sits right now, JR, they're going to have to do one of the first two?
Yes.
They're going to have to go out and figure out
something.
Well,
look at next year. Yeah. And the problem is, you know, based on what's happened in this offseason, and again, I believe it was Pablo that sent us the text earlier of what Ottawa did in the last offseason. Let's run down the list. Let me find it one more time. Now, he forgot Zub.
Yeah.
But Pablo writes, additions for the Sens this past offseason. Josh Brown, Eric Goodbranson, Matt Murray, Austin Watson, Alex Galchenyuk, Cedric Paquette, Braden Coburn, Evgeny Dadonov, Derek Stepan, Michael Haley. He forgot Zub. But if you look down, it's kind of one of those things where it's been a topic right from the start. And as the season has played itself out and most of these players have not lived up to expectation, you know, this is not a surprise. But then you kind of see the list put in front of you and you go, like, and again, absence of Zub. So Zub is a net positive.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Big time, yeah.
But other than that, it is everything from not even met expectations.
Yeah.
The best from that list is below expectation. I'll even say Austin Watson maybe at expectation, which is not a high bar with that player.
No, he's actually been below for me, it wasn't like, you know, I wasn't make or break. And you also have to go through each one, JR, and say, okay, what was the asset that was given up? And then you'd have to look at the allocation of a contract in the case of Murray and Dadonov. I mean, that's kind of all factoring it in that does point to, and I'll almost say with Stepan, unfortunate for the athlete, somewhat of a blessing. I know he's playing a tad better, but boy, I was really surprised at how much the wheels had come off that him getting injured and the story kind of going away for a second round pick is in some ways a bit of a blessing.
So the concern is, if you're advocating answers one or two on that web poll question we have of make a trade or sign a big-time free agent to going forward for the Sens in the offseason for the defense next year, you kind of look at that list and you go, okay, well, the brain trust this year and whoever was responsible, and it starts with Pierre Dorion, whoever else is in on those decisions, that is a net big-time loss this year in terms of how that offseason played out. Like, they are very, I won't say fortunate. I mean, they, you know, draft and develop has worked in terms of the forwards. That is on the right track, to be sure. Are there some nice prospects coming from North Dakota? And Alex Formanton looks like a good player. Absolutely. But, you know, as it sits right now with three UFAs on that defense, I don't know if any of them are going to be potentially re-signed at this stage other guys that have, with Christian Willanen's future very much up in the air.
Yeah.
What is Brännström at this stage? Like, you've got Shabbat and you got Zub. And after that, right now, and Zaitsev is signed.
Yeah.
After that, it's a giant question mark, and you go into the offseason, you go, do you really want to commit large-time dollars when it's been basically swing and a miss?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Now, I'll look at this and say, from a Brännström standpoint, I would also say to Willanen's spot, JR, this is where if I was a manager, I would step in. I would really prefer the rest of the way here that you give him as much time, and one argument could be, well, you know what, if you play him, he doesn't play well. I don't think people are banging down your door to trade for him, but I'd sure like to give him a lot more track to be able to say, okay, at the end of the year, you know what, this doesn't make sense. He's not a player versus him finding his way when that's what you're searching for.
Are we talking about Willanen now?
Yeah.
Can I make one point on Willanen? You brought it up because I brought up the fact, hey, at this stage, you know, send him to the minors. Would he get through waivers? You said no, and you said conditioning stint, which I hadn't thought of. Yeah. It's like, why wouldn't they do that? The guy's been rusting away now for what, a couple of weeks since he's played a game? No one is saying that Christian Willanen, when he got a chance, played well. No one is saying that. But I think there is still some thought of, find out for sure if this guy's a player or not. He would be a player you would have to protect in your expansion draft this summer with Seattle.
Yeah.
Why not send, you know, you can send him down for 2 weeks in the minors. Yeah. They play a pile of games in a short amount of time. Like, why wouldn't you do that as opposed to him rusting away in a press box?
Yeah, no, just the technicality on it. You can't send him. He has to agree to it.
Okay.
And that's the
only assuming he would want to play, wouldn't he?
But you know what, JR? You'd be shocked over the years. I've had players where they're sitting in a press box and you say, man, by the time you hop in, the guy that's in the minors playing, when he comes up, is going to be in a better spot. And I don't know if the discussion has been here. If I'm the Willanen in camp and I feel like, first of all, the coach doesn't like me, it's not going to work here, I guess part of you would say, you go down and play. Also part of you would say, well, no, why don't we just send, why don't you send me packing here to somewhere else? But it should on, if you have the right agent, you would recognize at this point, man, this guy's missed a lot of time as well. He's another player that had injury. Why wouldn't you go down and play even longer and just say, hey, you know what? 2 weeks, get down there, get playing, get confident. We want to put you in the best possible position, because playing as a sixth defenseman and making one mistake and playing 10 minutes, that's a major adjustment for when he was in college and in Belleville. Like that, that's not the role that he would normally play. So, and also just on the kind of a point on the defense, a little bit of glass half full. Now, I will also say that you didn't, other than Zaitsev, which I still don't like the contract, even with Connor Brown, you didn't lock yourself into a bunch of contracts. I think part of the theory was, at least with Bernard Docker, they were hoping on Willannon and Brännström. Do you know what I mean? That
there was was the bridge year.
These were placeholders. So I see a bit of that theory. But at the same time, you're not accomplishing the development point of where you want to be at as well. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what they end up doing. And let's also face facts. We bring up Dougie Hamilton. Okay, Dougie Hamilton is what, 7 years? Is it $8 million a year?
Yep.
Okay, so how many other teams are offering that? And is Dougie Hamilton coming to Ottawa? So
museums, museum pass, Nordique. We've gone through this already today. Petrie Island.
Yeah. And you know, you go like last year, Petrangelo. That's where
couples massages.
That's true. It's so rare on a Petrangelo to make it to market, even kind of rare in a guy like Krug, but with a flat cap. And then you go into the trade part. Like, history tells you, like, maybe there is a Seth Jones out there. You know, maybe there's a team that's so loaded up on defense, but, man, it is hard to find those types of trades. I even look at a guy like Joel Edmondson, the whole fan base in Montreal, which you said started analytically wasn't great. Boy, they've turned on him in a hurry. Yeah. Not overly thrilled about him being on the blue line.
Hey? No. And the thing on the you're absolutely right, and the guys they brought in all on 1 year deals. Oh, well, Riley was here last year, but you didn't commit yourself to a lot of term and any of those players. The fact is, there were a lot of players that you could have brought in. There are a lot of guys on 1 year deals, either as free agents or making trades. You know, none of these guys have overwhelmed. I'll put Eric Gudbranson maybe at the same level as Austin Watson. Below expectation, not horrendous, you know, and the coach likes him, and listen, they love the leadership, and he's a stand-up guy. I get all that part of it.
Oh yeah,
he brings a physical element, and so as a placeholder for a year, hometown guy, all that other stuff.
Yeah,
okay, I can sort of see that.
Yeah,
but they've got to do a better job at identifying, even if you bring in a guy in a 1 year contract, guys that can still play.
Yeah, and I really philosophically, JR, because I learned this and I'll tell it for the millionth time, like I really as a pro scout, now I'll make a bit of a joke, but when I would go to watch a Jeff Halpern and we'd sign him or bring back an older player or make trades, I found between that and being a goaltender pretty good. What I really found hard was understanding, first of all, if you're going to go scout defensemen, you better know what system they're playing so you can have an idea of what they're doing. But when I sat down with Randy Carlisle from a teaching standpoint, I think every team in the National Hockey League, first of all, should have a former defenseman on both their amateur and pro staff. And obviously Ottawa's drafting on that, and they may have one. And from a development standpoint, I think it's really important to have somebody that's played the position. And when Sergei Gonchar was in Washington, man, he was an absolute... He was Thomas Chabot. Just to use this as a comparison. Like, Gonch was very good on the power play. He did a lot of good things. Randy Carlisle came in and turned him into just an excellent defenseman. And I do look at that from Ottawa's perspective and kind of wonder, you know, are you maximizing enough out of both your prospects and certainly at the NHL level? Because as I said, if you run through this over the 10 years, now people say, oh, well, Cody Ceci wasn't any good, or Cowan and Weirkosh. But man, like, there has not been a lot come through your system. And I think right now between Bernard Docker, with Sanderson, with hopefully even Lassie Thompson, boy, you would hope that would help develop them and maybe fast-track them a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so go to our website, tsn1200.ca, vote on our web poll question, which is, what are the Sens going to do about what is the right thing to do about the D? Trade, big free agent signing, or can stay the course, draft and develop, maybe take a little bit longer. Go to our website and vote on our web poll question of the day. All right, 9:52. Want to remind you, of course, if pizza's on the menu for at some point this weekend, maybe you might want to take a look at Tipico Pizza with the 3 Ottawa locations. I've been talking about this for a while. If you haven't tried it yet, this is the weekend. Going to be a bit of a hunker down weekend, kind of chilly on the cold side. So you can get it delivered using the app or whatever. But Pico Pizza is where fast meets fresh, a place where authentic custom crafted Neapolitan pizza Can be fired up in 90 seconds using their gas-fired pizza oven and enjoyed without a reservation, a white tablecloth, or without the gratuity, if you so not choose. You can go in there and just order up personal pizza right there. Get your toppings. They've got the great Neapolitan dough. They've got the sauces imported directly from Italy, the cheeses, the toppings. And it is all fresh, and it is absolutely fantastic. In-store pricing available. Also, contactless pickup and delivery, loyalty points and rewards when you use the app. You can find the app, Pico Pizza, in the App Store. Go to their website, find out more information, see how it all comes together. At pico.ca, that's pico.ca, three locations in Ottawa, Richmond Road, Metcalf, or Rideau Street. Okay, 9:53. Wanted to touch on this because this news just came in. Boy, we spent some time this morning talking about the passing of Walter Gretzky. That came last night. Wayne Gretzky announced that. Canada's hockey dad died at the age of 82. Some sad news as well this morning from a very, very familiar face. If you love Canadian football and the CFL on TSN, Chris Schultz passed away yesterday as well at the far too young age of 61. Of course, Chris played in the NFL for a couple of years with the Dallas Cowboys, came back north as a proud Canadian, played for the Argos for 9 years, winning a Grey Cup in 1991. And then, of course, joined the CFL on TSN way back in the day. He was one of the faces in the early days when when TSN took over the CFL package. Of course, risky business was part of the thing with the NFL picks, but he was and it was a huge part of the Pure Later Tackle Hunger program as well. Chris was the face of that. Ran into some personal issues in the last little bit, and had not been on TV for the last little while. But again, 61 is just way too young. So Chris Schultz passed away yesterday, and certainly lots of acknowledgement of that from the likes of Rod Smith and James Duffy and all the guys that Chris worked with at TSN.
Yeah, and I thought when he left, JR, it was, you know, kind of cool to respect. They initially did not fill that spot, right? And then at one point, Hank copped in, and we talk about life and where life is at. Forget about COVID. You know, a lot of the discussion of his issues were his father passing away, you know, and how we relate that to everybody else. So, no, that was very sad. Met him a couple of times here. I think, I'm not just saying this because he passed, but you meet him and what you see on TV, I think, was so relatable as a person, right? He's just kind of that, why you're chuckling.
No, I'm chuckling because when you say when you meet him in person, he's like 6'9".
Yeah,
he was an enormous man.
Yeah, but just I don't know, just very. I think he connected on a nice level with people. Is just hey, the guy next door, other than being 6'9".
Yeah, absolutely. All right, 9:55. Let's quickly look at this day in sports history, shall we? For this March the 5th. And it was on this day in 1969 that Bobby Hull of the Chicago Blackhawks became the first player to score 50 goals in a season four times when he got two goals in a 4-4 tie with the New York Rangers. I'm going to actually edit some of these because I want to get to one in particular, which is a big one that happened on this day. On this day, though, in 1978, the 67s beat the London Knights 5-1. Bobby Smith had a goal and three assists and set the OHL record for most points in a season, 192, and to set the assists record as well at 123, a mark that I don't know that, given the way hockey is now, unless they completely change the rules, some of these goal and points records we see not only at the NHL level but at the junior hockey level, I don't know that they'll ever get broken. 192 points in the season for Bobby Smith, set on this day, the former 67.
Yeah, and even that was what made a guy like Rossi at his age, JR, how impressive the points were. And I just pulled up, and that is the same year, because I was kind of going through Wayne Gretzky in the year he was in the Sioux. Went to the game at the end of that year, first time I'd ever been to a junior game, and the Sioux was playing Ottawa, and they were vying for the scoring title one of the years, and they ended up having the old shootout between periods between the two of them, and that was a big thrill for everybody. And just remember, the Civic Center was just absolutely packed.
All right, March 5th, 2004. You're an Ottawa Senator fan, March 5th, 2004. All I have to say is Ottawa Senators, Philadelphia Flyers, games in Philly. Flyers won the game. Game is not remembered for any goals. Game is remembered. Well, let's go back. The day the voice Schreiber, Gord Wilson, here on the radio machine on TSN 1200.
Rob Ray trying to go with Brashear, and he's going with him.
Rob has been cut badly, too, over the left eye, I think, Dave. Well, and now we got another fight here, and a full-fledged Donnybrook, and here comes Patrick Laleem to the blue line. Let's keep an eye on that as Robert Esch unstraps the pads, and oh, so too does Patrick Laleem. The mask is off. The gloves are off. Laleem makes his way to the Philadelphia zone. He and Robert Esch now.
He wants that Robert Esch.
And Esch has still got the mask on. Patrick's got to get the mask off. Get the mask off. And now it's off. Now you can throw the rights, Patrick. And he does. Oh, there's nothing better than a good goaltending fight.
And here's another one. Another one. Now Samik and Neal are going at it.
And Tamander and Chera have teamed up.
Face off outside the Flyer line. Here goes Mike Fisher now.
And Hanszus.
Fisher and Hanszus.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Fisher just scored a huge left. Now Redden's at it. Oh, Redden's going at it now.
Oh,
now here goes Spezza.
Jason Spezza.
Spezza and Sharp are going at it. Right off the face off. Spezza dropping the gloves. What next? Holy cow.
Oh, and that is an edited version of what went on for, what, the better part of 10 minutes. That we have two all-time TSN 1200 drops that will live forever. Gordy Wilson, there's nothing better than a good goalie fight was there, and Shribes with the what's next?
What next?
Oh, just classic. Yeah. Happened 17 years ago today.
Yeah, I think a little disturbing for the younger audience that they actually seem to be enjoying it here. Well, and if that doesn't take you back to the fact that Shribes did the Ontario Hockey League from the 70s and 80s, like, come on. Like, the stuff, you would flat out, JR, like, multiple people would be arrested at the ice hockey arena now if what went on when Shribes was watching the 67. So, honestly, and the description of it, like, that's the you have a full vision here in Goody and Shribes.
Oh, I'm sure they're but Gord, especially with the goal, because Gord is the former Tendy, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Loves
for sure.
The goalie fights, yeah. And it's almost like I just as. Because his voice keeps rising and it gets faster and faster, the excitement level, and it feels like he's in his corner. You know what I mean? Oh, like it's in a boxing ring. You got to get the mask off, Patrick. Get the mask. And now he did. Now you control the rights, Patrick. Like he's in there. You can just see him barking from the corner.
Is it Ferdy Pacheco or who is a famous corner man?
Yeah.
And also to Goody. And I was the same when I was with Washington. Maybe not with Toronto. I can remember there'd be fights, JR, and you're kind of fighting yourself, right? You find yourself kind of giving a little bit of a right, and you're so into it, and you so badly want the Ottawa player to end up winning the fight, and you're so emotionally invested. I remember when the 5-on-5 was going on with Ottawa and Montreal, I'm on the concourse, and then I looked at myself, I'm like, I was actually kind of motioning like I was punching. It was pretty funny. I think that's the only time I've ever done that as far as watching the Sens.
My goodness. So an NHL record 419 penalty minutes in that game between the Sens and the Flyers. Yeah. 17 years ago today, on this day 2 years ago, Barry Trotz became the fourth coach in NHL history to have 800 regular season wins. That was when the Islanders beat the Sens, as a matter of fact, in a shootout, joining Scotty, Joel, Coach Q, and Ken Hitchcock, the only coaches with 800 wins.
Yeah, incredible for Trotzy. Stability, obviously, loyalty, and think back, boy, an assistant coach for me in the American Hockey League, and worked his way up to a head coach, and of course went with the expansion Predators, and a lot of thought that he couldn't win the big one. Wins it with Washington of all organizations, walks out of town with a little 5-on-5, and one of the best people you meet on the planet.
Sports birthdays today, Kent Tekulve. If you're an old-time baseball fan, you will know that name. He was one of those submarine pitchers from back in the day with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Dan Quisenberry was another that came right from the side. Kent Tekulve, born on this day in 1947. Yep. Michael Irvin, born on this day in 1966, of course. Member of the Triplets with the Cowboys. And still a member. You still see him on TSN from time to time.
Yeah, what a character. And seems to keep it in check. And back to Colby, the memory also is that that's when they had the funky hats with the Pirates, was it not, Jared?
Yeah, the high hat.
Yeah,
terrible hat.
Yeah.
Hammer, you come across him still on the Ball Diamond from time to time. Navin native Eric Bedard has a birthday today at the age of 42, still around town. You ran into him.
My son played on his stepson's team, the Ottawa Patriots, last summer, and he would come and he'd love to watch. Had a beautiful dog, too.
Yeah, I loved when Terry Marcotte would do the features. He's out in Navin at the farm, right?
Got the whole setup there.
Yeah, that was just so, like, that's right out of a movie. Hey, eh? Like, here's this Canadian pitcher coming down, and loved
he's
watching him.
He's throwing in
play. A barn. Yeah, it was really, really cool. Eh?
Very neat.
Hockey birthdays today. We set up the fact that Logan Brown and the Belleville Senators are taking on the Manitoba Moose tonight. Maybe Logan can score a goal to celebrate his 23rd birthday today. Logan Brown turns 23 years old today.
Yeah, and back to 1998 when he was born. We had just traded for his dad from Toronto. I think they were set up shop in Raleigh where he was previously and came in off of a broken ankle. Only got into a couple of games for us, but that was here he went to the finals.
Barrett Jackman, of the formerly of the St. Louis Blues, turns 40 years old today. He was a first-rounder with the Blues. Pretty much played his entire career in St. Louis, ended playing one season in Nashville, but you talk about your kind of throwback defensive defenseman, play it any way you want, kind of D-man.
Did he not win the Calder Trophy, Jer? Because I thought it was a year where it was really relaxed as far as it wasn't a very strong group, and I remember John Ferguson Jr. was with St. Louis. I thought they really lobbied for it, and I thought, yeah, he ended up winning because, as you said, he was just a throwback defensive defenseman, not the most talented guy, but a first-round pick of St. Louis.
And last but not least, speaking of first picks, first overall to the Ottawa Senators, Brian Berard. Is celebrating his birthday today. Brian turns 44 years old. Of course, drafted first overall by the Sens in 1995. Never ended up playing a game for the Sens. Was a part of a trade that ended up him being moved out of town and Wade Redden moving into town. The net is a positive on that one. Brian, of course, had his career, I won't say cut short, but obviously affected by the stick to the eye from Marian Hossa. But Brian Berard celebrating a birthday today.
Yeah, one of the kids out of Mount St. Charles in Rhode Island takes the route. First time I saw him, I think he was playing for the Plymouth Whalers in the Ontario Hockey League. And it is unfortunate, but I thought it was pretty cool, JR, that he came back. But then unfortunate, he was one of the multiple players that launched a lawsuit against the agent, right, and what is in his book. And basically, I don't know if he's broke, but took most of his money. So that was a shame for him. But, yeah, boy, oh, boy, could he skate back in the day.
Absolutely. All right, if you're celebrating your birthday today or any time this weekend, happy birthday to you. Enjoy it. It's going to be a chilly weekend, but the promise of warmer weather.